Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, September 30th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
It was an interesting day in the gold market today, and the white metals got hammered today. But gold was able to stay only 630 down at 1209.70 with a high of 1220. It's been all over the page today. Silver was down 43 at 1714, dipping to 1679 with a high of 1750. Platinum just down a buck at 1302 with palladium down 17 at $775. And so silver got hit the most today at 2.5%. You have the USDX today traded once above 86. I'm sorry, not 76, 86 at 85.93, up 0.31. Crude oil, interesting, down 3.19, $3, 91.38. And there's just no reason. There's just no rhyme or reason.
It's because we had a bad winter. Don't forget that.
and we're expecting another
one. Demonstrating in Hong Kong.
And we're expecting another bad winter.
I'm going to make a prediction right now that it will get cold in the next several months.
Brr.
It's an unusual prediction, but you can mark my words. It'll get cold in December in parts of the United States.
But January does too. The Dow down 28 points at 17,042. The Nasdaq down 12 at 44.93, and the S&P down 5 at 1972, with the 10-year yield up 0.02 at 2.51%. So, and it's kind of a little interesting because the I guess it was reversed. Never mind on that commentary. But
Never mind. Yes, but you know what we're looking at right now.
What?
And this is interesting. This is very freaking interesting. One of the hallmarks, it's not always true, there's such a thing as a hyperinflationary depression, where the currency actually loses value while the country is in an economic depression. But typically, when you see a depression, one of the hallmarks of an economic depression is deflation. And what we're seeing right here, I'm looking, I've got something like 17 economic indicators that I'm looking at, including the Dow and NASDAQ and the price of crude oil and gold and silver and the other metals and so on. And most of them, what is it, out of the 17, 15 of them are down. And the only two that are up, Dow Jones is up by a little over five points.
Well, you're looking at a delay. You're looking at a delay.
That's not my point.
Because the Dow was down.
We're looking at the dollar up. It's been over 86 today. The dollar is growing more valuable. That means we are in an era of deflation. Insofar as deflation corresponds to economic depression, what we're seeing in the markets, prices of commodities, prices of stocks, so on, going down, price of crude oil going down $3. And what, I mean, that was did worse than silver. Probably that probably translates into something like 4% down in a day for crude oil. But the dollar is up to 85.93 that I'm looking at on the indicator I'm looking at, but it's been 86 today at one point or another. This is evidence of deflation. Deflation is typically a hallmark of economic depression. This cannot be tolerated if they want to avoid an economic depression. They might be able to sustain deflation for a while longer. I don't know if that's true or false, but I can guarantee you somebody in the Federal Reserve and somebody in the White House ought to be saying, OMG, if we're not going to have an economic depression, somebody's got to stop the deflation. Somebody's got to make the dollar less valuable, and that's been the government's primary strategy for over 40 years. Part of the reason why the dollar has, over the last 40 years, it's lost 95-97% of its purchasing power, because government wants inflation, and here we are, if we can believe the U.S. dollar index, we are seeing, and what we see in some of the metals and the crude oil, for God's sake. It's evidence. It's not proof. All right, this isn't a done deal yet. These are just leaves in the breeze, but we're looking at deflation. And that tells me that either somebody is prepared to put this country into a depression, or some sort of a reaction has to take place in the near future that is going to push inflation. Someone's got to push the dollar down. And I can't understand. I have a very difficult time understanding why they are allowing the dollar to rise to 86, for example. What do they think they're going to get out of this? We're going to be able to buy more imports. It's going to close down our own exports. We may be able to buy more imports if we have any money. If you have a job or you have any savings, you'll get a better deal on imports. I get that, but it's not good for the economy. It always pushes you deeper and deeper into a depression once it gets rolling. Why is this being allowed to happen? Is there a reason for this, or is it just that the system is out of control and the government can't stop it from happening? Doesn't make good sense. But if anyone is still in control, I expect this has to be reversed soon. Not necessarily next week, but soon. We've got to see inflation, dollar's got to go down, U.S. dollar index got to go down, crude's got to come up, gold's got to come up, silver's got to come up, or we're going into a depression. So what do you think, Melody? Are we going to see inflation, or are we going to see a depression?
Well, personally, I believe to some degree you're going to see a little bit of both happening at the same time. This is what we've been seeing. We've been seeing some things where prices have been depressed, and we've seen things where things are rising, like our food and so forth. I think the reason you see the U.S. dollar is stronger, I think, is the agreement between the U.S. and the U.K. I mean, look at where the euro was at. I mean, the euro was trading at 138, 139. It was killing them. And I do believe we all know they manipulate currencies. We all know how volatile the currencies are. They're all fiat currencies. And, you know, I think whatever the central banks had to do in order to exchange the currencies, ours began to get strong. The euro started to go on down. You had the huge stimulus that that's being put in. The ECB created for the central bank for the European Union states. And I agree. I think you're going to probably see it reverse. You will see that dollar go down for all the reasons that you just explained. And you're right. Everything else is going to have to come back up, like the because you're right. None of these countries, and the biggest complaint that that England had, that the European Central Bank had, was deflation. We need inflation.
Yeah,
so our little agreement, you know, I mean, look how many trillions of dollars was given to England and the European Central Bank during the crisis. Trillions of dollars were given. That was reported. So, yeah, I think they're in bed with one another and, you know, they do what they have to do.
Yeah, but, you know, they do what they have to do, but they are caught in a strange situation.
That's what I mean.
In the same bed, but it doesn't mean that this is a happy marriage. Somebody's got to take a beating on the
situation.
And as you pointed out, when Europe was in or near deflation, Europe was taking the beating.
Yes.
Now we are in deflation, if you can believe what the U.S. dollar index suggests. We are in or approaching a period of deflation. And if it's true, we're the ones that are going to take the beating. So who's going to volunteer to take the beating? But somebody's going to get beat.
Huh? I think England will be the first one to get beat, and then we will follow shortly thereafter. Because I was looking at their external debt to GDP ratio, and if you look at those numbers, you know, with England and Germany and Greece, I mean, those numbers are staggering compared to even to the U.S. So, I mean, if you look at those numbers, they're amazing. Absolutely
astonishing. Yeah, well, you're talking in terms of the official numbers. I doubt that England can be anywhere near as much in debt as we are. I agree with John Williams and his estimates, and even he comes up and comes close to $90 trillion in debt. The official debt, $17 trillion, yeah, it's not that bad. It's roughly 100% of our gross domestic product. But $90 trillion, according to John Williams, that's something like, what, four times? All right, four times the size of, all right, that's big. I doubt if there's another nation.
Size-wise, yes.
Unfunded liabilities, you're up to over $200 trillion. We have a massive, that would be like 12, 13 times the size of our gross domestic product.
You're
can't
right, dollar-wise.
Possibly be paid. Can't possibly be paid. And sooner or later, that reality is going to intrude. And when it does, everyone who's holding those little pieces of paper that are called U.S. Treasury notes and bonds and so on, they're going to find out, oh, they're actually not worth anything because they're not going to be paid. And then they're going to sit back and say, gee, I wish I'd bought some gold. Because you know what? Gold is still worth something.
But you know, Al, you're right. The dollar amount is certainly larger in the U.S. than in the U.K. and the European nations. But the percentages, it's all relative. England, the U.K., they hold just as I read where they hold more derivatives than the U.S. does.
Okay,
so,
that may
I mean,
be
they
true.
Can
I'm
be,
just talking about
they
the government.
Be,
I'm just talking about national
debt. They can be significant. I mean, you know, they'll probably fall first. I think England will fall first.
If you're talking about total debt, I was only referring to national debt. That's all I was talking about was national debt. And I don't know for a fact, but I doubt that anyone comes close to matching us. If we can believe the estimates from John Williams and particularly from the Congressional Budget Office and what economist, who's the other one, Lawrence Kotlikoff. And he says over $200 trillion in debt. Somebody's got, for every dollar of that debt, there is a correlative debt instrument, a piece of paper with someone's signature on it, and somebody is holding those little pieces of paper and say, look, I've got a piece of paper that's worth $100,000. Only thing is most of those pieces of paper are not going to be paid. Right? My guess is 80, 90% will not be paid because they cannot be paid. And even if I'm wrong, at least half of them can't be paid. Which means if you're holding on to those little pieces of paper, odds are, in my estimation, you're going to lose half your assets before this is done.
We got a caller on the line. We have Jim from West Virginia. Good afternoon, Jim.
Oh, you're making my afternoon better, as always. You know, I've read about a dozen books by real economists, and it all boils down to really simple stuff when you get through everything. But my lesson from the stock market is if you have a stock where the fundamentals are good and the price is going down, it's being manipulated down because people are wanting to shake that stock out of your hands and put it into theirs. And time after time, I would see that for a little while, go down, 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 then it'd turn around, I'd buy it, and it would go up a lot. I couldn't buy because I didn't have enough money. But at any rate, invariably that was true. And inflation and deflation, I look at everything as relative. So many times people measure everything with that rubber band dollar called the Federal Reserve Note. And you look at food and you say, ooh, it's inflating. Better buy as much as can right now. And let's say, for instance, the housing market is deflating. In some areas it's deflating. I've heard some areas it's having a little mini boom. But I think I'll just kind of hold off before I buy that. So what it boils down to is everybody, well, normally what happens in the economic crash is that people don't have any money. And then things go down in price. Then manufacturers can no longer afford to manufacture them, and they go out of business. And that's when these so-and-sos buy up all these various businesses at dimes on the dollar. So that's what I see, and that makes it real simple for folks. A lot of times, if you read economics books, you'll be able to get it before you're halfway through. So if you see it like that, you'll understand why the value of gold and silver, okay? I understand that somebody who can manipulate the market, that big boys, the insiders, know it's worth something. So they're shaking it down with the ETFs, so to shake it out of your hands. So what do? You buy now. And you see food going up, what do? You buy now. Something else, and keep something else in mind, folks. If you have a $5,000 book sitting out in your driveway, what's that going to be worth after she goes kabang down? 1,500, I don't know. If some coal strikes, people used to go into the coal fields in West Virginia, hot guns and cars and a variety of things at real good prices. So if you have something just kind of laying around, you think to yourself, now what good are golf clubs if I'm sitting there staying at home to keep my looters from hitting my own? Just stop and think about what's going to go up in value, what's going to go down in value. Houses will go down in value. Food will go up in value. Boats will go down in value. Collectibles are already down in value. So I wanted to think about it like that. Which direction is it going? And as usual, you guys do great. So just sometimes I can simplify things. And the reason why the dollar's strong is I believe the other currencies are shakier than ours. So we'll wait and see. When ours starts going down, money's going to flee the stock exchanges here in America. But yeah, I look at that 85.93, I think, as an indicator not so much of our currency, but the others. And I thank you, folks.
Thank you, Jim. Where are we, Melody? We've got a couple of seconds here before we're going to take our commercial break.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we do. We have about 45 seconds.
Well, today the U.S. consumer confidence fell in September and deteriorated after hitting the highest level in nearly 7 years in August. All those expert economists said the fall appears to be weather-related. No, just kidding. Appears to be a temporary slip, and that shouldn't dampen the consumer spending in the coming months. But the numbers, the index fell to 86.0, the lowest point since the May reading of 82.2. But the August was 93.4, so it dropped from 93.4 to 86.
That's a pretty good jump.
It's a pretty big drop.
Yeah, that's a big drop. That's almost 10 points. Yeah. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, Karen Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Now, you did say gold and silver coin needs, and that's what folks need to be buying, coins. You know, again, stay away from novelties unless you are looking to buy a novelty. But if you're looking to preserve your wealth, then this is what you should be doing, is preserving your wealth. Gold as your savings account, silver as your checking account. That's how you should view things. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. You know, once a lot of these novelties are gone, there comes along something else. And, you know, there's folks that'll just go ahead and you know, they think it's neat, it's fun. And I get that. I do the same thing with other, you know, something that might come along. I understand that. I get that. But, this is money. You're trading your hard-earned money, for real money.
Trading your currency.
You're trading your currency for real money.
Paper currency for real money.
And it's a little bit different. It's a little more important not to involve the novelty aspect when it comes to purchasing this type of a product. I could sit here and list 10 different types of, you know, short-term items that have been offered various places, no particular place, but at various places, and they come and they go, and then the next one is brought along for everyone to buy. And,
The thing about the novelties
is that
they are... Yeah, it does.
It sells.
It's the same way as you can sell a cap that's got a Cowboys logo on it. All right, some people want that, and some people want a logo from the Washington Redskins. If we can we still say Redskins, Melody, or is that politically incorrect? But the point I'm getting to is novelties are something you do for yourself. But when you get down into an investment, you have to think not merely about yourself, When you're talking about real money, you are talking not just about yourself. Oh, isn't that cute? Isn't that shiny? Isn't that pretty? You're thinking, what about the next guy? What's he going to think when I produce this? You produce a novelty, and he's going to say, well, I guess that was cute, but I never cared for it myself. A novelty does, it may ring your bell, but it doesn't necessarily ring the next guy's bell. But when you get into money, you start talking about money, you are talking about something that you know, have a high level of confidence that the next guy is going to value it just as much as you do. It's not a novelty. Does it make any sense? Does that make any sense, Melody?
Absolutely. And, you know, folks fall into the multi-level marketing aspect of various products and so forth. And, you know, just Google and see just how successful some multi-level marketing is. Very few people, I mean, you have to work darn hard and you have to know a lot of people for it to be successful for you. And I gave the example, you have a lot of jewelry, you know, in-home jewelry shows and, you know, makeup and cookware and, you know, Tupperware.
Oh, we've had vitamins. There have been vitamins and nutritional supplements and the rest of that sort of thing. There's been all sorts of things.
No one really makes a lot of money.
Well, some people make a spectacular amount of money,
but they
at least
spend,
in the beginning, at least at the top.
They spend and they sacrifice a lot of time. They work at it 100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not as easy as what everybody portrays it to be.
Well, you know what the problem is.
You can be successful, but it's difficult.
The multi-level marketing depends on finding more and more sociable people, right? If you're going to be successful at multi-level marketing, you've got to know 20, 30, 50 people that you can sell the product to. And then they've got to know 20, 30, 50 people. And they'll tell you that all you need is two or four or whatever. But if you're going to make big money, you've got to be sociable. You got to have a lot of friends, a lot of acquaintances. You got to be the kind of person to go out, strike up a conversation, and persuade people to purchase something in hopes that they'll be able to find 20 more sociable people that they'll sell to. And the point I'm getting to, and it just now crosses my mind, I won't say it's God's truth, but it strikes me as at least interesting idea, is that there's only so many sociable people in this world.
Anymore.
Right? And you run out of sociable people, and the whole thing collapses. You're not going to sell these. You're not going to sell your multi-level marketing to asocial or antisocial individuals. And I don't think the gregarious and the sociable, I don't think they're more than a relatively small percentage of the population. And that may be the limit on multi-level marketing.
And that's why usually only those at the top are the ones that are really successful. And as soon as the program loses steam, another one will be introduced. And again, this time you can earn your whatever. But anyway, 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Al, do you live in North Dallas?
I do.
Oh, you do? Well, it doesn't say what part of Dallas.
No, it doesn't matter. It's at the Presbyterian Hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's, I don't care if it's in the state, I find it disturbing. Yeah. And if it's in Dallas, I find it particularly disturbing. And it makes me kind of wince and it makes me kind of pucker. And I don't like it.
But the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas has admitted a patient in strict isolation to be evaluated for the potential Ebola virus disease. And this is all based on his symptoms and, of course, his recent travel history. And I guess they're following the hospital.
Meaning that he's been to Africa in the last
little
while.
Meaning he's been to Africa. And, you know, what's amazing is you think by this point in time, if it wasn't so contagious, that all you have to do is wash your hands and not touch any bodily fluids. You think if you knew that going into those areas that, you know, you should be pretty safe. So how much of that is true?
You'd have to be crazy to go to the countries where they have these problems.
Because I'll guarantee you it's probably a lot. Well, I don't know. But the possibility is there that it's more contagious than, of course, they let on. But the hospital is following the CDC's and the Texas Department of Health recommendations to ensure the safety of everyone at the hospital and visitors. And, you know, he has shown that the symptoms. And I saw, I think it was Jim Sinclair that I saw his comment. And he says, well, if the mainstream media doesn't report on this article, it means it's true.
Probably right.
And he's absolutely.
Yeah.
But it is scary.
It does say that no Ebola cases have been confirmed in the United States so far. There haven't been any that have been confirmed. We've got somebody in in the Presbyterian Hospital here in Dallas, and they suspect he or she may have Ebola. We don't know if it's true or false. It's just a suspicion at the moment. But still, it's disturbing because some of the predictions, which I think are exaggerated, I think they're hyperbolic, I don't think they're going to be true. There's been one that predicted that there could be 1.4 million deaths caused by Ebola by January of next year. That presumes a contagion rate, a rate of infection that is just about impossible to stop. I don't think it's correct, all right? I hope it's not correct. But if it is correct, Ebola is going to sweep the whole world. There'll be nothing you can do. If it can move that fast, if you can go from 20 or 30 cases to 1.5 million in a matter of 6 months or thereabouts, you've got a disease that is going to cover the globe. I don't think that's true. I think it's exaggerated, but it's one of those things. I think that report was based on a computer study by the Center for Disease Control. I think it was their computer that came up with that prediction, but, you know, you can get anything out of it. You can predict anything. You feed the right data in there, the right formula. You can prove. Still, these are, in theory, responsible people. That number shouldn't be completely irrational. But God help us if it's true.
What I don't understand, Al, we have three that were treated in Atlanta. There was a fourth in Omaha. You have an American physician that's been exposed to the virus, not infected. He's in Maryland. He was flown to Maryland over the weekend. You got the guy in Texas. I don't see any other articles around the world where you don't see an Ebola patient in Italy, in Rome.
I don't see
an Ebola patient anywhere else but here in the States.
Which tells
there was
us.
One in England. I think there
which
was.
Which tells us what?
I don't
it
know.
It suggests it's hype. It suggests that it's being we are being fed a bunch of crapola. And it's nowhere near as serious as they are leading us to believe.
I mean, I can't believe
if we're the only ones that are being threatened by this, then chances are, especially if it can spread at the rate they were talking about, 1.4 million in January of 2015. I mean, that's scary.
Are we the only ones that are doing missionary work?
No, we're the only ones that need to be conned. All right? They're using this probably to deceive people and maybe frighten us. It's like the equivalent of the 9/11 attacks back in 2001. They knocked down some buildings, and under the pretext of being attacked by terrorists, they passed the Patriot Act and helped turn this country in the direction of a police state rather than a free society. We can expect if they can stampede enough people with this Ebola threat, perhaps they've got another, they're going to have another amp. There will increase the amount of regulation and police activities based on the fear that Ebola can instill. But if it's not, you're exactly right. If it's not also happening in Italy, and it's not also spreading in India and China has all kinds, they have a lot of contact with Africa. Some of the Chinese workers and officials that are working in Africa should be bringing this illness back to China. And in China, it'd move in a hurry, as crowded as they are. If it's as lethal as some people suggest, it would move. I mean, it would solve China's population problem. It'd be back to where you'd have to whistle across the mountains to find somebody else to respond to you.
That may be true, but you know what, Al? There is something about this that just kind of makes you uncomfortable. Whether we look at it as a farce, as an exaggeration, it still makes, it's an uncomfortable in thinking, what in the world are these people doing bringing them here if that really is the case?
I know. It would have been simpler to install, you can pack a laboratory, a medical facility,
and treat
you can
it
pack it into
there.
An airplane. All right, you can go down and unload it like a tank or a mobile home or something like that, a recreational vehicle. You can unload it. You can take your you can take the medical care to the people in Africa rather than take the people from Africa over here. You know, if it's really as lethal as some people suggest, it's irresponsible to bring the people who may have it back to this country. And we don't know another thing about this. You know, there are things like there are diseases that some people carry, but they don't get.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't see the symptoms. Tuberculosis, for example. There are people who carry it. They don't have it, but they carry it. We don't know that you're mentioning a doctor came back from Africa. He didn't get it. He didn't get the symptoms. We know that. Right? We don't know, or at least I don't know, and it may be
carrier.
That other people, we don't know if this guy's accidentally carrying this stuff. He didn't get the symptoms, but maybe he's carrying. We don't know that. I'm not saying that's true, but I'm saying it's a reasonable consideration. And we should not be bringing people back with a disease that they claim to be as lethal as this one is. That shouldn't be brought back into this country.
No, it is disturbing, to say the least.
Well, you know, the other thing that's disturbing about it is this. Let's suppose that the predictions and all that about Ebola, the exaggeration, let's suppose it is hype. It's still disturbing because why is someone falsifying this information? It's either true or it's false. If it's true, oh my gosh, we've got a big problem. If it's false,
why?
We have some other kind of problem is perhaps coming our way. Precisely, and they're going to try to take advantage of our ignorance. They're going to try to lead us into, who knows, some state of panic or whatever. Either way, it makes you, you know, it makes you wonder what's going on here. And, you know, how wary do we have to be?
Well, it looks like California became a little wary about plastic, Al.
Yeah.
The environmentalists, yeah.
It's all those little California smiley face discs. They have finally clogged up the sewer systems and.
But the Governor Jerry Brown, he signed legislation imposing the nation's first statewide ban on single-use plastic bags at grocery and convenience stores, and that is driven to action by a buildup of litter and damage to aquatic ecosystems. A national coalition of plastic bag manufacturers immediately said it would seek a voter referendum to repeal the law, which is scheduled to take effect in July of 2015. Plastic bags will be phased out at the checkout counters at large grocery stores and supermarkets like Walmart and Target starting next summer, and convenience stores and pharmacies in 2016. Now, it doesn't apply to the bags that you use for your fruits, vegetables, and things like that, or shopping bags used at other retailers. So it's funny how they're just targeting certain stores, which kind of makes you wonder. It allows grocers to charge a fee of at least 10 cents for using paper bags. So Los Angeles and San Francisco already had such bans, and this is a major milestone for environmentalists. And, you know, I do think plastic is bad. I think those plastic straps that keeps your six-packs together, I think those have been dangerous, too. But it also goes to show, you know, people really don't care. They just throw things away. They litter.
You know, a lot of litter,
our waters,
though, a lot
our
of litter is to some degree excusable. I'm not advocating litter, but it's excusable in the sense that the litter self-destructs. It burns up. It dissolves. It degrades. You know, it just
plastic,
whatever. Yeah. It disappears in a sense. That plastic is going to last virtually
forever.
Yes. Yeah. And there's the problem. This stuff is not biodegradable, and therefore this stuff just accumulates and accumulates. So there's the problem.
But with the ban, it's going to, you know, with California blasting the ban as a cash giveaway to grocers, it's going to lead, you know, to possible thousands of manufacturing job losses because of
Look on the bright side, Melody. If I can't carry my groceries home in a bag, maybe the people who used to make bags can get a job carrying my groceries for me.
Maybe.
See, so
perhaps. You know, always the bright side.
Got that silver lining going on here. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And I've got an article here from the Washington Times that strikes me as important. A lot of things we talk about on this program are perhaps interesting. Hopefully, they're interesting. But once in a while, you see something that strikes me as being truly important. This is one of those articles. The headline is U.S. Intel disputes Obama's claim on Islamic State. What they're talking about, U.S. policy leaders, including President Obama, were repeatedly warned for more than a year by the U.S. intelligence community that the Islamic State terror group was gaining significant strength in Syria and was on the verge of seizing territory deep inside of Iraq, where the Iraqi military was struggling to respond. In private assessments, which were confirmed to the Washington Times on Monday, by U.S. intelligence conflict with Mr. Obama's claim on national television on 60 Minutes this Sunday that America's spies had underestimated the rise and capabilities of the Islamic State and had overestimated the Iraqi military's ability to and will to fight the Islamic State. All right? So we've got President Obama on Sunday is saying the reason we're having a problem with ISIS in Iraq and in Syria is because American intelligence didn't alert Obama and other government officials early enough to the threat. They didn't see the threat coming, and therefore we have a more of a problem than we might otherwise have had. If we'd known what was happening from the beginning, from early on, we might have been able to stop ISIS before it developed into something as significant as it is right now. Now, today, the intelligence agencies, or at least the article refers to members of the intelligence community, who, according to this article, want to stay anonymous. They don't want to be specifically identified. And yet the Washington Times says, no, this is a real deal. Right? These people are providing, are disputing President Obama's claim and providing evidence that the intelligence community repeatedly warned President and or high officials of the threat posed by ISIS since June of last year. You understand that? The fact that the President Obama and or high officials failed to heed the intelligence community's repeated warnings is not the story here. Right? The fact that, all right, they were getting warned, they were warned last June before any of us had even heard about ISIS, the government was warned. Okay? And what happens, what is that the story? No, that's not the story. The big story is that although the specific sources who've revealed President Obama's failure to respond to the warnings about ISIS, although they haven't been specifically identified in this Washington Times article, it seems certain that these sources are in the U.S. intelligence community and are probably from the CIA, NSA, military intelligence, and or the intelligence, the congressmen and senators who sit on the various intelligence committees in Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Thus, U.S. intelligence is not merely refuting Obama's attempt to blame the intelligence community for his failure to deal with ISIS at an earlier date. The intelligence community is implicitly calling President Obama a liar. And they're making that call in public. And that is a big story. Conflicts of the sort we're seeing between Obama and the U.S. intelligence community might be virulent. Behind closed doors, it might be that sometimes they get to screaming and shouting at each other, but we don't expect to see them in public. All right? We don't expect, if there were serious bad blood between the president and the intelligence community, we would expect the intelligence community, it might scream and shout behind closed doors, but it'll keep its mouth shut in public. Insofar as the intelligence community has gone public, all right? They're calling the president, the commander-in-chief, they're calling him a liar in public. That public response isn't likely to have been the result of a single instance of Obama's false claims on 60 Minutes. Instead, the public response by the intelligence community implies that either, one, there's been a long simmering antagonism between President Obama and the intelligence community that's been hidden from the public, but which President Obama's claims on 60 Minutes, where he essentially said that this was the fault of the intelligence community, that claim may have broken the camel's back. It may have been more than the intelligence community could stand, and they said, that's it, we're going to get this guy. Or two, there are forces at work who, having gotten rid of former Attorney General Eric Holder, are now gearing up to impeach the president or otherwise force him to resign. Now, the reason I say that, the intelligence community's implied public claims that President Obama is lying is evidence that Obama has not only lost the respect of much of the government, he's lost their loyalty and also lost control over important elements of the government. Obama, increasingly, he's not a lame duck. He may be a dead duck. All right? If he can't control the intelligence community, can he hold the office? If he has alienated the CIA, the NSA, whoever, if he's alienated them as enough where they're willing to go public, this is a clandestine, these are clandestine agencies. They don't say nothing to anybody about anything in public. And yet they've done that in relationship to the President of the United States. It indicates significant antagonism between Obama and the intelligence community. There appears to be a growing faction within the government who is incensed by President Obama's seemingly anti-American policies, as I am, and as people in this audience are. In other words, there may be some good men and some good women in government who actually care more about this country than they care about their jobs and their pensions. There may be some good men and women in government who increasingly side with the ideas espoused by my side, by people like me and Melody and our audience. Obama is due to serve as president until 2017, January 2017. I'm beginning to think he's not going to hold the office that long. I'm beginning to think that there are forces at work who may cause Obama to emulate another notorious liar named Richard Milhouse Nixon, who, faced with the threat of impeachment, resigned in disgrace from the presidency. We've got the fast and furious case where our government was sending arms to drug dealers in Mexico. We've got the Benghazi situation where our government allowed American officers, officials to be murdered. I don't know what else they've got on Obama, but my guess is that they've got enough where if there are enough people in government who finally say, that's it, we've had enough of this guy, he's got to go. I think that might be coming. I'm not saying, I'm not making a prediction, but I'm saying the events where the intelligence community essentially exposes the president as a liar, that is big news to me. Something's going on here. What do you think, Melody? Much ado about nothing.
No, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we know David Krieger from Hobson NBT. You know, he's a military man. And he says the military also is so disgusted with the way things are handled in Washington. And I've said this before on the program. And it's the lack of communication. And when you think about, you know, you have to wonder, you know, why they're bringing this to the forefront, but it puts them in danger also. It puts their families in danger. It does put this country in danger. So we're not really sure where they, you know, where their true alliance is, but yet there's danger. And what it was said was that the military is the lack of communication from the White House, from the administration, from Obama, and if there was ever a serious conflict, that's where the dangerous situation would be. And, you know, here we come into a serious situation, and certainly...
And he can't count on the loyalty of his own agencies. That's the implication.
Well, Obama has no respect.
He's busy playing golf.
How many pictures do we have to see where, you know, his lack of respect for saluting Marines and the way, you know, and pictures say 1,000 words. And, you know, here these men and women are, you know, giving their lives and so forth, and yet you can't get the respect from the
Yeah, that's another one of those things that has to irritate people in positions like in the military and or in the intelligence community. These people have to be highly just pissed when the president doesn't even give a proper salute. It's not a big thing. In and of itself, it's not a big thing. The president was carrying a cup of coffee or whatever. He had a big Slurpee. Who knows what it was. He had something. He just said, right? No big thing. And yet... that picture goes out, and it's the sort of thing that alienates. It has way more impact than the event itself. No big deal. The picture, big deal. All right?
And, you know, it's just a combination. You bring everything together, and you add it all up. And it's, you know, when we talk about the decline of this country, there's many good things in this country that is still here, but yet we see the decline. We see it's not getting better. It's getting worse, and it's just all this. And it's all coming from Washington. Not all of it, but... that's where the leadership
majority,
is.
Vast majority. 70% of the trouble is in Washington, D.C.
And it's filtering down.
Yeah, no. And there's not going to be an easy solution.
No.
But they
have why you see situations in Ferguson. This is why you see situations like that. This is why you see situations that are cropping up in various places.
Well, because people are stressed financially. Yes. Right? That's part of it.
They don't have anything to do.
They don't have anything to do. And it's not just that they need activity. They'd like to buy a new car. They'd like to get their own home. They'd like to move out of their folks' basement.
Well, that's what I mean. Right? They don't have anything to do. They don't have a job. They don't have an income.
I agree. And it makes people prone.
They get a check.
They're looking for someone to blame. And right or wrong, President Obama looks like he's made for the part. All right. He's going to take the heat on this thing, and we'll watch and see how this unfolds. But again, this strikes me as a big, important news item. The intelligence community is turning on President Obama, and not behind closed doors. They're doing it in public.
You know, what's interesting is they're not backing down either.
No.
I mean,
and
they've
President
been.
Obama
yes.
has.
Yes.
Spokesman said, well, Obama stands by what he said, but he's not blaming the intelligence community. He stands by what he says, but he's not blaming the intelligence community. Bunk. He's attempting. What can he do? He has to either admit he was lying or he has to stand by what he said. He's going to stand by what he said, but he said, oh, but I'm not blaming these people for not telling me. It's just. You know, if they'd have told me in time, we could have done something. It's all crapola. He is in a difficult situation right now, and it will be. He's not going to get out of it. Right? Any more than he got out of Benghazi, any more than he got out of Fast and Furious. They avoided him. The consequences have not yet come home to roost. But this is the kind of thing where you sit back and you wonder, how much longer can this guy get away with this stuff? How much longer can he continue to salute with a cup of whatever, a Slurpee? All right? How much longer can that happen? You know, somewhere along the line, Obama's got to show us that he takes the office of being president as seriously as we do. All right? There's people out here like myself, for example, who take this seriously. All right? And we are offended by a president who behaves in a way that seems just lackadaisical. No, it's cool. I don't know. Shall I go to the Oval Office or shall we go get a fast round of golf in? Let's go play golf. Come on. What the heck? That isn't going to do for president of the United States. And yet that's the way Obama appears at times. He's got to start taking this serious. I don't even know if he can, but he's got to start doing that, and I don't think he's done it up until now. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back mañana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, always.